Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. My name is Eric Schlitt. Joe Caney is off this week, and so we are welcoming in, once again, Scott Bischoff to the podcast. Scott, welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. Scott, for those of you who aren't familiar, has been a contributor at Lions Wire. He has been a draft analyst for decades now, it seems like.
I don't know.
Years and years and years. Strong writer in the fantasy football industry as well. Lots of good stuff there. And in addition to that, from a local perspective, you are on the radio with Sean Bleagian doing a Lions-specific podcast. And you do a lot of good stuff with WJR. And so we are excited to have you on. And we are going to just kind of start out talking about the Lions roster and kind of like the Lions and potential draft picks, but we have no design to this podcast. We're just going to kind of let it free form and see where it goes, and we'll see what happens. So, welcome, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. It's going to be fun. It's always fun just kind of BSing through this. Not BSing, you know what I'm saying? Just talking about it. It's interesting.
We've always tried to, you know, keep our interactions just like two guys sitting around. So, let's give that organic experience, I guess, to the listeners. I know they'll enjoy it. They enjoyed it last time we did it when we talked about Patricia's defensive scheme, yeah. Right? And got a lot of good feedback from that. So let's just kind of start out. I guess we should start out talking about pick three, right? Lions are sitting here at pick three, and there's a lot of different options on which direction they can go. Before the podcast began, we're talking about quarterback and what that means and the value of teams wanting to get a quarterback early and how that could potentially drive trade offers up. And are the Lions interested in taking a quarterback? I think most of us most of the fans that are listening to us and we are very comfortable with Stafford. But you know, there's value at the position of taking a quarterback high. So for the Lions, let's just say everything stays chalk, right? Let's say Burrow goes at the top, and let's say Chase Young goes at two. The Lions are on the board. If two is healthy, I think we probably both agree that somebody's going to want to get up and come up and get him, right? Should the Lions be one of those teams?
Yeah.
Do they want to stay there and take him?
Well, so the thing that to consider in all this is, yeah, I mean, the quarterback position is the most important in football, period. It just is. Mm-hmm. So if you're, let's just play a game of, Stafford is he's 31, correct?
Yeah, going to be 32, right?
Yes. Yep. Broken back 2 years in a row.
Yep.
There's some, as much as you can appreciate what Stafford has been and continues to be and what he is as a football player, and I think that is he's received knocks in this city that to me is just, it's unfathomable to look at what he is as a player and the things that he still is able to do. And the truth is that he was having an MVP type. I mean, he really was having an MVP type season through 8 weeks,
yeah,
before he was hurt.
Yeah, almost. He was 1 yard away from being halfway to 5,000. He was, putting touchdowns up like.
There was really one player in the NFL. I think I did this through eight games. There was one player in the NFL who threw more touchdown passes per game than Matt Stafford, and that was Russell Wilson. That's it. I know Mahomes was hurt, but. Yeah. I mean, because I feel the eyes rolling out there, but I'll just go look at his numbers through 8 weeks. They were great.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you know Stafford's good to go from a health standpoint, which I think is a hard thing to do at this point with his age and given the conditions in which the last two seasons have ended.
Okay.
If you think he's good and you're not concerned about his injuries, then I think that you can't take a quarterback. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But let's just play a game. If Stafford performs, plays for five more seasons,
mm-hmm.
and there's a year-to-year 5% decline in his performance, which is not unreasonable to think,
mm-hmm.
do you think, at any point in time, you're in a position to take the number one quarterback in the draft?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no. They're not going to be drafting first or second or third overall at any point. Assuming he stays healthy in those 5 years.
Right.
You're almost just kind of punting on a possibility to totally retool it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, there are other things that factor into that decision, like the amount of dead money on this contract in this season. What do you do in year one? It's a perfect scenario for as far as Tua is concerned because he gets to sit for a year.
It's also we also can't neglect the win now mandate, right? And so I think in my mind, that is going to drive decision making. If you're concerned about Stafford, like let's say they are legitimately concerned about his back, I don't know how much they're going to really lean on a quarterback at three because of that win now. I feel like they have to get somebody that's going to impact them year one. But don't you feel
like they could spin that to ownership that, hey, you gave us a mandate, but we also mm-hmm. did what was right for this team going forward? I mean, I think there's a lot of ways
know.
You can.
I don't know.
Think you can. I think that you can say, you know, the right thing for this entire team is for us to have the foundation in place for the future.
Okay.
And that's the whole point of what they're trying to do. Now if you're telling me that there truly is this hardcore, line in the sand mandate that they must be in playoff competition through 12, 13 games kind mm-hmm. of thing, then, yeah, you're not taking quarterback.
In my mind, I think that's what's on the table.
Okay.
I really think that is. And I do agree with you that if you have an opportunity to take a franchise quarterback, you have to consider it. And I also agree with if you're concerned about Stafford, you have to consider Tua, who again has to medically check out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So let's entertain the trade out in that scenario, because
right.
it's almost a disservice if you're not taking. All right, so if Chase Young is unavailable, meaning he goes one or two,
right,
and you're not interested in taking a quarterback, to me, the only option is to trade out.
Mm-hmm.
In order for that to happen, there has to be a player that somebody wants to come up and get. So first things first, you'd really be rooting for Tua's medicals to come back.
Right.
So
yeah.
So let's operate under the premise that Tua's medicals come back good, and mm-hmm. and there is a potential for them to trade down. Where are they going to?
So I wrote an article on this. There's seven
teams. Where can the people find it?
there's seven teams that are going to need to position themselves to get a quarterback. Now, obviously, they can go in free agency and they can get someone to, you know, tide them over. But the legitimate contenders that want a quarterback are the Dolphins at five. The Chargers at six, the Panthers at seven. Those are your heavy players. And of those three, the Dolphins have the most firepower. They have multiple second-round picks. They have multiple first-round picks, right? They can outbid the Chargers and the Panthers, hands down. Where things get tricky is the Raiders at 12, right? And that's because the Raiders have two first-round picks. Now, they don't have any second-round picks.
But they do have future first-round picks, which is
they do have future first-round picks.
Some teams might be able to jump Miami.
And so the question will then become, well, I think if the Raiders get involved, that's going to force Miami's hand a little bit.
I hope so.
I think if the Miami is sitting at five and they just need to outbid the Chargers and the Panthers, they can offer a first and 2 seconds. And that's probably acceptable from a value standpoint. You can probably walk away with it because the Miami can outbid them, the Chargers and the Panthers. Now, if the Chargers and the Panthers start offering futures, maybe the Lions are interested in that, but maybe not, because if they have to win now, they might need players that can make impacts early, and they're willing to take a lesser price in order to get players now. Now, if the Raiders get involved with two first-rounders, now the Dolphins have to be more creative, and maybe the Dolphins have to include two first-rounders, and then it goes up from there. But
yeah.
I think at a minimum, if the Lions trade back, they're walking away with probably two day two picks if they trade back to five, and it can be more than that. So, yeah, if you can get that value, yeah, I think those are the teams that are looking. Those are the teams, the Giants. I'm sorry, the Giants. The Dolphins, the Chargers, and the Panthers. Those are the players that I think Lions need to be focused
on. I agree with you. Those are the ones. But I also think that the win now mentality means a lot of things. And you could say that for Bob Quinn to come out of day one of the draft with a 2021 first round pick by one of those teams, a team that you might think might be picking in the top 15 next year, is winning.
No, I agree.
And I think that it's reasonable to take that to ownership and say, hey, we won the day.
No, I agree completely. He has said, I need to work the offseason for now and for the future. That's Bob's job. And so I can see him selling that. And I wouldn't disagree that it would be a bad move either. The whole win now thing has me, you know, perplexed a little bit, and it has me considering scenarios that I hadn't considered before. Like if the Chargers are offering a first, a second, and a first next year, and the Dolphins are offering a first and 2 seconds, well, then you take the Chargers deal because that's a better deal to get that first next year. But would Bob Quinn say, I need to get that extra guy and be willing to take that second? I don't know. That it's something I wouldn't have thought of before, but now I think it's more in play.
I would hope that the first round pick for next year would be so enticing for them that it would be something that would drive their decision making.
I agree. I just that it's a question mark for me, we'll see. Right? Yeah. All right. So those are the players. Dolphins, Chargers, Panthers. Dolphins aren't happy with where they're at. They have a built-in gap bridge with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Sure.
So if Tua comes in and they say, hey, long-term he's going to be healthy, but he might need a year, perfect scenario for them. Chargers, maybe not so much, because the Chargers have already said they're moving on from Phillip Rivers, and maybe they signed a guy like Teddy Bridgewater for a year, and they want to bridge the gap that way. Maybe. Panthers, again,
I think both teams have a bridge to Tua for the end of the second half of the season. I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor can play for the Chargers if Tua's coming in, and he can play at a respectable level for 8 weeks, right?
Yeah. And there's a couple of names out there, like I don't know if James Winston would sign a 1 year deal necessarily, but
I see Mariota doing it.
I could see Bridgewater and Mariota both taking 1 year prove it deals. Like Bridgewater won 5 games. He's 5-0, right?
Yeah, he played very well.
He should get a deal more than 1 year. But will he? I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to see how that plays out. But
so if the Lions are at 5,
yeah. If the Lions are at 5, it opens things up quite a bit, right?
It does, but I think it gives you the opportunity to take a player you were going to take at 3.
I agree with that as well, because if the Bengals are, let's say, again, just to reset this for the listeners, you have Burrow and Chase Young off the board. You now have the Dolphins in this scenario trading up for Tua. Now you have to just get past the Giants, and all indicators say the Giants are looking at maybe a tackle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is not something...
And it's Gettleman, so I would think that would be a reasonable place for him to go.
And Gettleman is not a guy who trades back. And I know, like, people, can take it for what it is because it's somewhat of a small sample size. But Gettleman is... He's a guy who wouldn't even take phone calls in the past to trade down. He likes where he's at, and he picks where he's at, and that's just the way it is.
And yeah, honestly, there's some tackles in this class that would be reasonable for them to take it for. Like Mekhi Becton from Louisville is a name that people, I don't think, have associated with the early parts of round one, but he's a massive human being who can move. Andrew Thomas from Georgia.
Jedrick Willis from Alabama.
Yeah, he is the guy at 4 where you could say he really helps us a ton.
And I like Wirfs a ton. I think for the Lions, I think Wirfs might be the top tackle on the Lions board.
Yeah.
Not necessarily on the Giants.
Well, he comes from the right school, that's for sure.
And he can shift in and play either tackle spot, which is not something that that you can necessarily say a guy like Andrew Thomas, who's been playing left tackle for 4 years, that he could shift over to right and have it be flawless, where Wirfs is a guy who's shown he can do that. So, but regardless, for the Giants, they're going to have some choices at tackle, and it sure makes a lot of sense for what they're trying to do. And then all of a sudden, the best defensive player left on the board that you were probably going to consider at 3 is now there at 5 again, right? And so
So who is that?
That's a great question. Who in my mind, I could see them going several different ways. The most popular pick is Okuda, right?
Yeah.
And everyone loves Okuda, and he's very trendy. I mean, every national guy.
The dogs like Okuda.
Every national analyst right now is pegging them with Okuda, right? Kiper McShay from ESPN, Bucky Brooks and Jeremiah, like they're all everybody. They're all saying it's Okuda right now. Now, keep in mind, last year they were pairing a lot of these guys were pairing Greedy Williams with the Lions at nine, right?
Yeah, it's for press man coverage.
And so it took a while before they started to come around to the Hockenson pick, which a lot of them ended up having at the end. But I don't know if they're going to shift away from Okuda, because pick three is a lot different than pick nine or eight. And so at three, Okuda makes a lot of sense. So, I mean.
And he makes more sense at five.
Tell me. Oh, well, yeah, obviously.
If you're getting the player you were going to take at three at five, then anything you're getting on top of it is just gravy.
Right.
Now, Okuda does rare things. He's fun to watch. Honestly, he must have pills the size of grapefruits to play the way he does. Because, I mean, it is rare to see a guy so completely unconcerned about getting beat deep. I mean, I have no concerns. I'm going to just patiently wait here for you. I will reroute you. I will then flip my hips and catch you very quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I will, you know, squeeze you to the boundary, or I'll get you off your landmark, or, you know, whatever it is. He's fantastic at that kind of stuff. So you can see why he's a match to Detroit, because of the way he plays physically as a cover corner. Mm-hmm. But he does do some things that are kind of rare and interesting to watch. Just his athletic abilities, I think he's going to test crazy.
So the big knock with taking corners is that it takes them a long time to acclimate to the NFL, and mm-hmm. you don't often see the production. And do you see that with Okuda? Like, do you think there's going to be a learning curve with him?
I think there is always.
Right. Now, is his learning curve, in my opinion, his learning curve is going to be a lot shorter. And you've seen that with some of these corners taken at the top of the draft. Jalen Ramsey, right? Yeah. All these guys. There's a handful of guys that have gone early and justified their selection.
Yeah, I think he's in that class.
Yeah.
Where he'll justify it. Doesn't mean he's going to be a shut down guy mm-hmm. in year one.
And he doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be because Slay's here.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're playing Slay on one side and you're allowing him to check number twos, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Right. Put a pin in Okuda for a second. Yeah. Are they going to trade Slay?
I don't know.
I don't think they will. I don't see how you trade your Pro Bowler when you run a press scheme for anything less than a first-round pick. And I think that's what they want, too.
So the question there then becomes price and contract. And
right.
I think with a player with 1 year left on his deal, he would be tough to get. It'd be tough to get a first-round pick for him, but mm-hmm. I agree. He should warrant a first-round pick, period.
I think that's what they're asking. I think they want a first and maybe a first plus. And I think that's going to be a tough market. And which is why I think he ends up staying in Detroit. Will he work out a deal? I don't know. Last year he was the top paid player at his position. Now this year he's the 10th.
Yeah.
And that's before free agency. So he might even now. Could you give him a raise and give him like a 2-year or 3-year extension? You really wouldn't affect your cap that much, in my opinion. I think he's still making enough money that you could bump him up a little bit, make him happy. In my opinion, the crux here is that they don't want to be tied to a bigger contract 2 years from now.
Yeah.
But again, if you need to win, and you need this, and you've got a guy who can get you to win, you almost have to make it happen to keep your best, arguably your best defensive player on the roster and keep him happy.
Yeah, that's the mandate is the thing that will dictate whether Slay stays or goes.
Right. All right.
I mean the right decision I think is if you can get a first round pick for him, you should. If you don't want him long term, mm-hmm. and if he doesn't fit your scheme perfectly the way mm-hmm. you really need them to, I mean if you can flip him for a first round pick, and it makes some sense. But I don't think that we should. I think we need to operate that Slay's here.
In my
And that's, you know.
So pairing him with Okuda would be fantastic. I think that's a he's a warranted pick in the top five, and I think he makes some sense. And there's a reason why everyone's connecting. Now, is cornerback their biggest need? Probably not their biggest need. It's obviously a big need, but in my opinion, they need a defensive tackle. They need a penetrating interior force. And so then that takes you to the next most popular pick right now is Derrick Brown. And I've been pushing the, hey, everyone needs to be paying attention to Javon Kinlaw.
Uh-huh.
And and now here's two guys that should be in the mix or should be in the conversation. And I know you, from talking to you in the past, you lean one way more than the other. So you want to talk about which player you would prefer?
Well, I think they're contrasting players.
Yes,
contrasting
very much.
Style. So is, much. Essentially is, are you playing – the concept of their of 3-4 and 4-3 and all that stuff is sort of out the window in terms of the truth is are you playing one gap or two?
Right.
So Kinlaw to me is more of a one-gap defensive tackle, and Derrick Brown is a two-gap defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kinlaw is going to give you a little more interior production. He's going to give you more pressure from the interior, but I do not think he's going to anchor and eat space as well as Derrick Brown will. So if thinking of it in terms of snacks, Snacks was 2 years ago. He was phenomenal just at being stout at the point of attack at the line of scrimmage. We're not going backwards, and I'm occupying two blockers, which is allowing one of my teammates to run free into gaps, either on my right or left. You know, and they're making plays. I'm allowing my teammates to make plays. That's Derrick Brown in this class. Now, right. Can he give you some pass rush? A little bit, yeah.
And that's a significant role.
It's a huge role.
Yeah, it's a catalyst to what happens on either side of the line, and it impacts the run game. And when Snacks was not successful, that was a huge detriment to the Lions' defense last year. So history says you don't take a guy like Snacks in the top five because you can get those guys later who can plug up the holes. But Derrick Brown is a guy whose game I think is more than just a hole plugger, right?
Yes. He can give you a little bit of pass rush,
right?
Where if you move back, if you look at a player like Lekai Fotu from Utah,
yes,
who's
top 100 guy,
in my opinion. I mean if you're in round three, and he's around or round four, whatever, you know,
could be the Lions' fourth round pick,
he
right?
could
yeah,
be
it's right in that spot.
If he is your natural replacement as an anchor.
Yes.
For what Snacks is.
Yes.
He's not going to give you pass rush. But if your desire is to take a guy who's just going to occupy blockers, Fotu can do that. There's other guys that can do that.
Right.
Devon Hamilton from Ohio State can do that. You know,
yeah.
So there are players who can do those things. You don't need to take, it doesn't have to be Derrick Brown. But if you think Brown is that combination of a player who's going to swallow space while also pressuring the quarterback from the interior, I understand it. I don't think he's going to do that as much as Kinlaw does, though.
Right, and I agree. If you want a penetrator, Kinlaw's your choice. If you want a space eater, or if you want a gap occupier, then Brown's your choice. For the Lions scheme, they're okay getting, in my opinion, they're okay getting pressure up the middle without actually having to get to the quarterback. There's value in that.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And Brown can do that, which is why I think he may be more valuable on the Lions board than he would be on other teams' board.
I think that's 100% accurate.
Right. And going back to Kinlaw, though, while we look at him more as a traditional one-gapper, I think he can two-gap. I think he's strong enough.
I think he is too. I just think his natural abilities tend to be one of those guys who just somehow gets up the field.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, having seen it at the Senior Bowl, he is really good at it. And he is powerful, and he is disruptive. He's quick. He's explosive. I will tell you that he did better in one-on-one blocks than he did where he was doubled. Where you could see that, you know, there's some struggle with the ability to hold up when he's being double teamed.
Okay.
But, you know, you wouldn't, you know, I would think that he'd be coming here to be more disruptive in the backfield while right. also being a very good run defender mm-hmm. than what you'd be asking Derek Brown, which is, you know, squeeze, push the pocket, reset the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. I think that's the point with Derek Brown, is that he's more of a reset the line of scrimmage and create havoc and pressure, you know, eroding at running lanes before the plays even started. I think he's going to do that for you more than what Kinlaw can do.
Hmm.
So it's just a matter of whether or not you want the pass rush from the interior. So what's the trade-offs are, Kinlaw's going to give you more pass rush but isn't going to be as good a run defender, which also means that your linebackers are going to have to play a little more precise hmm. because there are going to be times where he may not be perfectly positioned in his gap. Where with Brown, I think they're gonna fall in love with the concept that he is so gap sound that we don't have to worry about asking. Our linebackers don't have to worry about where he's going because they know he's going to be where he should be. Mm-hmm. And it gives them a very direct way to the ball. Mm-hmm. And it makes things a little easier for them. Mm-hmm. So I can see both sides of that coin. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a matter of whether they want a guy who's going to disrupt the line of scrimmage and just be, you know, kind of create chaos in interior, mm-hmm. or do you want a penetrating type?
And I think this is another situation where it's a critical role on the field, but the player who is currently playing a critical role next to them has injury issues, and you're not sure about what their health is long term, right? So, like with corner, you don't know what you're getting out of Slay long term, so you have to keep the part of the sell on Okuda is you've now got a guy who can make an instant impact now and you have in the future. Now with Derek Brown, if you're worried about snacks, you get a guy who you can play next to him that can make an impact now, but then he can also be a replacement at a key position down the road.
Yeah.
If you think snacks is going to rebound and you're thinking about taking Fotu later. Well, then maybe you do value Kinlaw more because you need somebody that can play next to that immovable force, right?
So it would be nightmarish for teams. It really would be.
Right. And this is where it gets tricky and this is what we don't know, is we don't know, are the Lions comfortable with snacks? Do they think he will rebound off an injury-prone season? Are they planning on taking another nose tackle later? And by not knowing those things, it's hard for us to say, yeah, Brown's above Kinlaw for one reason or another. So I do think both players are still very much in play. Now,
I think Kinlaw is more in play if they were to move back to, say, 7 than maybe 5.
Yes, and I think they'd love to get Brown there, too.
He may not be there.
It's hard to say, if he would be there. All right, so outside of those three players...
There's one more.
I say there's two.
Okay.
I'm going to throw two at you. Who's your one more?
Judy.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's three more.
Okay.
Good, because I wasn't even thinking offense for a second. Good. I'm with you. All right. I think I don't know if Jeff has said this publicly. Jeff Risden. I think he has. If he believes that if teams want to trade up to 3, it might not even be them wanting to trade up 3 to get Tua. It might be to trade up to get Judy.
Yeah.
He thinks Judy's that impactful of a player that teams will be looking to go up and get him. And you agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. I think he... So if we're looking at it from a mandate standpoint,
mm-hmm.
there is no player in this draft. I don't think there's a player in this draft that can get them to the mandate more than Judy can.
Okay. I agree with this. And let me just cut you off here for a second, and then I'll let you go. There's a school of thought that says your offense is really good. Why not just make it elite and then just bring your defense along, and then it'll drive people a little nuts. But if you have an elite offense, you can get by with some, you know, working out the kinks on defense with other players. And Judy could make this offense next level.
Yeah, he absolutely can. I think he helps Hockenson. I think he would help. I mean, the truth is that if you look past this year, the receiver position is a bit of a black hole.
No one is signed beyond 2020. And while I think they get a deal done with Kenny Golladay to get him, Not a single receiver assigned beyond
2020. I don't think Marvin Jones will be coming back as a 31-year-old. I mean, we've seen them move on from Golden Tate. Right? Yeah. So I know they're different players. One was a slot receiver, one's an outside guy. But the idea of wide receiver not being a primary need for them is, to me, is like it's something that people aren't talking about enough. Judy is rare in the way he runs routes and the ability to make guys miss. He is a perfect underneath route runner to a vertical threat.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in scenarios where you're going to take shots down the field to Galladay, and you're going to run up the seam with Hockenson, and you need to have an underneath guy who just is somewhat uncoverable. Mm-hmm. That's Judy. And if you're telling me going into the 2020 season that Stafford's healthy and ready to roll, and you've got Galladay and Jerry Judy and Marvin Jones and TJ Hockenson, I think your offense has the chance to be a very, very exciting unit. So the Judy stuff is more mandate related, but it doesn't mean that there isn't a need at the receiver position. No, there really is.
I agree. The only thing that I guess I think might cause some people pause of taking a receiver early is that this is an incredible class, right?
It is.
And you can find a guy like KJ Hill in the third or maybe even fourth. I don't know if he'll be there in the fourth. And he's can serve a lot of purpose in this role in 2020. Now, beyond, you're going to have to, if you only extend Galladay, you may have to go back into the receiver pool again next year, whereas Judy, you don't have to, right? Judy's going to give you that luxury of you've now secured, if you extend Galladay, two receivers for like 5 years, right? You're going to be solid.
Plus, he's going to give you an insane amount of production on a rookie contract, which they're going to need.
Yes. Especially if you're extending Kenny, right? This is one of these things that I don't think gets addressed enough, right? Is that it's how much are you spending positionally, and how much can you afford to spend on other players at the position? And a perfect example is the offensive line, right? You have Taylor Decker and Rick Wagner both making over $10,000 or $10 million. Both making over $10 million.
Just went back in time.
Wagner's making 11.9 and Decker's making 10.35. One of the reasons I think they may not have extended Glasgow is because can they afford an $8 to $10 million, a third $8 to $10 million player?
And in 3 years or 2 years, another one with Ragnow.
Right, and so that could be part of the, in my opinion, I think it's a big factor in why they didn't extend Glasgow. And it also makes me think that they're probably not looking to get rid of Rick Wagner just yet.
Yeah.
Now, if they get rid of Wagner, then you could sign Glasgow. And now you're okay from a spending standpoint. But when you look at, like, receiver, you're going to have Galladay making a pretty significant amount of money.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, and so you have to be prudent in how many productive guys are you going to get on those rookie contracts.
And it'd be nice to have Judy as one and Hockenson as another.
Right. One of the reasons that Jones and Galladay meshed and then they couldn't afford Golden was because Golden and Marvin were making so much money and they knew that Kenny payday was coming, so you move on from Golden, and so now you can afford the position, I guess, a little bit better, right? And so, I think they're going to need a receiver that's going to be able to produce at a high level.
I think receiver is a position that, in this draft, that you need to take one. The latest they should be taking a receiver is in round two.
Oh, okay. I was going to say third is probably the last one because they have a high third, right? They pick 65.
They do.
So you could get I think you could get a guy at 65 that is going to be a Kenny Galladay like producer. Give him a year, and then by year two he's a starter. I think you can get away with it, but we talk about getting elite value in the top five, and that's really what Judy is. Judy is an elite value, and he should be considered. if you start getting back in that 5 to 10 range, let's say somebody wants Herbert, right? And they trade up. Jacksonville trades up from 7. Now you pick at 7. Judy's gone. Okuda's gone. Brown's gone. You're not ready. Kinlaw isn't what you want exactly. Now you got to go somewhere else, right? And I think this is where there's a couple other guys that can come into play. And the first one that I want to talk about is Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about Isaiah at length before I wrote my piece on him.
I don't think anything was resolved after that conversation
either. No, because the thing that what ended up happening was I felt more comfortable with my breakdown of him and saying that I believe he's a safety in the Lions scheme. But my final conclusion was I think he's more like Tracy Walker, and I wasn't sure if there was room for both. Then when I did my deep dive on the linebackers, I saw how they were using Tavon Wilson, and I mistakenly apparently undervalued Tavon Wilson and how much he does, because Isaiah Simmons would fit into that Tavon Wilson role like gangbusters. And I know have spoken about him in the past, saying you think he can even play deep.
I think he can play all over the place.
Right, and so now
let me rephrase. Okay.
Yes,
I think he can play all over the place, but I do not see him as a Mike linebacker going forward, taking on guards and attacking the run. I don't see that with him.
All right, so the Tavon Wilson took one or two snaps at Mike a game.
Yeah.
And that's fine with Simmons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can play him at Mike, but I don't think he can live at Mike. And this was a point that I think both of us agreed on. His most ideal spots are outside of the tackle box in coverage.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And there's... That's such a key role, again, for this Lions team that you could, again, justify taking Okuda, I think, in the top 10. Because of the impact that he could have. You can roll with the linebackers that you have, and you can get a plugger up front if you get good coverage on the back end. Now, you'd have to make some free agent signings in order at certain spots in order to make Simmons work.
Yeah, but I think he fixes some of their coverage issues that remain.
Yeah.
Right? I think he takes the scenario in which and not in a traditional sense. So I mean, I'm going to say this, and I don't want people to roll their eyes at what I'm going to say, but it takes Jared Davis out of the coverage mix in some ways. It puts the premium on Tavai having to be a coverage guy a little bit less, because Simmons can come in and be physical, and he can play the run, and he can chase, and he can do a lot of things, but he's going to lock down areas of the field in coverage, which is something they don't have.
One of the things that they did against Minnesota last year in week 14 was they used more four-down linemen and three linebackers because they wanted to get bigger. And what ended up happening with that was they had to use Christian Jones in coverage. Simmons eliminates that need,
yes,
in my mind, because he's a big enough guy that he can still be someone that you can count on and run support in the box when you're going up against teams that have more of success in the run game like Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yet he still has that coverage range where you're not asking Jones or Jared Davis or Tavai to run with the tight end down the field.
Yeah, he's absolutely not a liability as a run defender.
Right.
He's
not. But again, this isn't a guy that I've envisioned as a linebacker on a permanent basis. He's a guy that I think could play at the linebacker level, but not in the linebacker roles that the Lions have.
And he's a bit of a chess piece.
Yeah, I know people really love him, but traditionally an off-the-ball linebacker doesn't go in the top 10.
Yeah, and so that's the conversation, is if you're going to consider him a box safety with plus coverage abilities, which I think is underselling him a touch, but I think that's, in the NFL, his role is going to be as a box safety with some advanced coverage skills, right? So do you value that at pick whatever it is inside the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the ultimate question. Is there, do you value that that box safety coverage stuff? And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that there's a good answer for that. I don't even know if there's a good comparison for him, truthfully, for what he's able to do, for the things that he can do.
I think I agree with you, he's a rare, like, he's what people want Miles Kilburn to be,
yeah,
right? Back,
yeah,
then, right? And Miles went in the third because he's not the same player that Simmons is here. But I do think there's a bit of, like with cornerback, there's a bit of a trend in the NFL now that off the ball guys can go early if they can make an impact. Devin White went at 5,
yeah,
last year.
Yeah.
Roquan Smith went at 8.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're starting to see this kind of conversion in the NFL as teams are relying more on players, you know, needing to be fast, right?
Yeah.
And while the Lions are a team that prefers you know, bigger bodies.
Yeah.
If you're playing him at safety, he's a big body at safety.
He is a huge body at safety.
Right?
And the truth is that there are times on film where you can see him line up as a deep safety, and he's totally capable.
Well, you
of
pointed
that
this out. His pick in the Ohio State playoff game was from a single high safety spot.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at a guy who can play, who has the versatility, and with the Lions, the versatility is king.
Right.
To play, not all the time, but he can take reps as a single high guy. Mm-hmm. He can take reps in Tracy Walker's role. He can take reps as a linebacker in some cases. He can, but you'd be utilizing his ability to move,
mm-hmm,
his ability to cover, and his ability to kind of be a Band-Aid for some of their other flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's exciting. We do need to consider that some of the things that we're talking about with him, we are counting more than one time.
Sure.
It's almost like looking at a cornerback. So let's talk about Okuda for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Akuda's out. He's a boundary corner.
Mm-hmm.
He could be elite there. Oh, well, guess what else he can do? He can play over the slot.
Sure.
So should we count his coverage ability twice?
Right. Yep.
Right. You know what I mean? So with Simmons, we shouldn't look at him as a player who can cover multiple levels, because we know he can cover.
Mm-hmm.
So So the truth is that he has. Really good coverage abilities while being able to help as a run defender. And
right.
I think that's kind of the nuts and bolts of what his game is. He's not a liability as a run defender, and he's a really good coverage player as a safety.
Mm-hmm.
But to expect him to play corner or to roll out and play over the slot, I think that's counting too many things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that I've gotten caught into in the past, where you've seen the Swiss Army knife type versatility for players, and you think automatically he'll find his way in the NFL, and at some position he'll work it out and he'll be elite there.
Mm.
And the truth is that he's great at college because he's really good at a lot of things, but he might not be elite at one thing. So there's a little, I have just a touch of pause that he's so good at everything as a football, and he's a great football player, that we might be missing the forest through the trees a little bit in that, what is he elite at?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to watch more film. I got to watch more film on him.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that he can be elite in coverage. I think he can be okay as a run defender. I think he can be phenomenal in chasing, pursuing, you know, but is that redundant in what they have? So,
well, that's the thing.
Those are all the things. I know you want to talk about him and the redundancy with Tracy Walker, and I think it's a really good thought process.
Well, I was going to say, the Lions just spent two third-round picks on two safeties. So
yeah.
now you
want to wash those guys out?
Well, that's the thing is how much are you going to devalue the development of Will Harris, right?
Yeah.
But is Will Harris is he deserving of a spot? Like, when you saw Tracy Walker as a rookie, like, you could see in year two he's starting. Like,
yeah,
there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
But with Harris, I don't see that. I think he's played well enough that he deserves a shot to start. I don't know if he's a surefire, he's a starter next year.
I don't know that he is either, but I think Simmons makes him... I mean, they're going to play different spots in different different ways. Yes. So there's a scenario in which you could say Walker and Simmons and Harris are on the field together.
Yeah, because they place three safeties like almost 50% of the time.
That's one of the things that Patricia's done in the past where... The extra safety has been a huge piece of it.
Right. So I think you can justify it.
No doubt. You can.
Because I think with Harris, you're still playing a significant role. But that role is going to be limited if you add a guy like Simmons. All right. Last guy I want to talk about. Another Iowa guy.
AJ. Oh, boy.
AJ Epenesa.
Yeah.
All right. Epenesa is a guy who I'm not necessarily saying he should be in the top 10, but if you trade with let's say Oakland entices you and he's there at 12.
Sure. Sold. Now bang the gavel.
Okay. So but with the Lions, they have a way of saying this guy fits what I want. And I don't care if the league thinks he's 12. I think he's 7.
Yeah.
And they could, and I could see them saying, at 7, Epenesa's our guy. That's who we want. And let's do this. Now, people are going to say, well, he's redundant because he plays the same spot as Trey Flowers, right? And I don't see it.
He's a really, really good pass rusher. That's not redundant.
Right.
There's no redundancy there.
It's the same argument against Epenesa as it is against taking Chase Young. You've got a guy who can pass rush from a down defensive end spot and who can push inside and play a different role. Like with Epenesa, he's going to push inside like Flowers and be more. He can play some three technique, whereas Young, you might be dropping him into a jack or something right? So they're a little bit different in that. But you can play both of them at the down defensive end spot, even though you just spent a boatload of money on Flowers. Now, I mentioned this to you, and I just want to say it so that the listeners can hear this too, but last year, Flowers played 62% of the Lions' defensive snaps. His backup, who is not a starter, Romeo Okwara, played 53%.
So he's a starter.
Right. Essentially. He's not a starter, but he's a starter. And it's the same thing with Deshaun Hand. Deshaun Hand is technically not a starter, but he's your best defensive lineman, probably. Yeah. Right? And when you're looking at a guy like Chase Young or Epenesa, and you're saying, well, he plays the same spot as Flowers, you have to be able to look past that. Because in the Lions scheme, if you're on the two deep, you can play starter snaps on any given week, even though you're playing on the two deep. And so with guys like Young and Epenesa and trying to mix them in with Flowers, because of their ability to play different positions, they can still get a full complement of starter snaps because you can play Flowers somewhere else. You can play Epenesa somewhere
else. Wouldn't the addition of Epenesa allow you to be a little more versatile?
A lot line. More versatile.
I mean, I think it allows you to play Flowers inside.
Exactly. And if you're playing Flowers inside, now the need for a defensive interior presence is less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you take a guy like Epen, if you are in the, I need Derek Brown, I need Kinlaw, well, you take a guy like Epenesa or a guy like Chase Young, and Flowers now is taking interior snap roles, and now you need that defensive guy less. So you're going to, by adding, the way the scheme works is by adding guys at one position, you're still helping out other positions as well. And I think that gets lost sometimes when we're looking at, you know, is this guy going to be a starter? Where is he going to play?
Yeah.
They're going to play. Like,
it's a little bit Tavai and Jared Davis. Like you took one in round one 2 years ago, and then you just took another linebacker who plays the mic in round
exactly.
two.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a more perfect match in this draft for the Lions in a player, a defensive player, but to Epenesa.
Yeah.
Long, powerful, not real athletic. This is not a shot, but it seems to be, they seem to be a little bit turned off by the smaller, undersized guys, like Harold Landry types.
Sure.
They're just not interested in those guys. Epenesa's your big, powerful, set the edge, do his job, you know, maintain the integrity of his gap while also being able to squeeze.
Sorry.
I just got ran over. While being able to squeeze the pocket and pressure the passer, he's just not a premium athlete. But we've seen them not care about that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Trey Flowers is 6'2", 266. A little over 6'2", 266. Epenesa is 6'6", 284.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bigger version of Trey Flowers in my mind. And maybe Flowers stays at the edge and it's Epenesa who's coming in more on the three technique because he has that capability.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be a guy that they're going to look at it at three. I'm not ruling it out either. But
I would not rule it out.
Right? I'm not.
We've seen that
right.
Were they a little bit with Hockenson last year was that there was a safe player who they fell in love with.
Yes.
And they probably had hired. So
look, if you like Cam Jordan for the Saints, he's Cam Jordan.
Yeah.
Right?
I laughed a little bit at looking at some of the mocks 6 weeks ago. And when the Lions were projected to pick 6, 5, 6, 7, Epenesa was the pick pretty much all across the board.
Okay.
And then as the Lions moved up, Epenesa then went to, say, pick 11, mm-hmm. 13,
sure.
17, kind of. And it was like, all right, these guys are just matching skill set and players' play style
mm-hmm.
to what the Lions are and maybe not necessarily understanding what he is as a player.
Right. In my mind, he's a top 15 guy,
regardless
of scheme. And as a junior, you know, he's been overlooked a little bit in my mind right now. And I don't think we've talked enough about him. Now, Kinlaw was a guy that we were pushing, Senior Bowl put him in the conversation with everybody. He did a good job. And I think Epenesa, you're going to see a similar type rise. When the combine comes around, when people start to really get a look at him. And so I do think you've got, when you know, to kind of put a bow on all of these guys, Okuda's in the mix. Obviously, Chase Young's your preferred guy. Epenesa's in the mix. Brown's in the mix. Kinlaw's in the mix. And Judy. And that's six guys, right? And I think they would be happy with any of those six guys, depending on which direction that they want to go.
Yeah.
And so when we go back to how we started this off with the whole trades, it now becomes, okay, I forgot Simmons, that's seven. All right.
Yeah.
So now it becomes, how far are you willing to trade back and which guy are you targeting? Because you're going to get a couple quarterbacks that are going to go in there, at least one offensive tackle, maybe a receiver that's not Judy. You never know with somebody that might have a preference.
I could see Henry Ruggs being a priority for a team looking for a pure vertical guy.
And people are going to love CeeDee Lamb, too.
And
I know he's not as high on other people's board, but there's teams that are going to love him.
The combine will shake some of that stuff up. But I can see that team like the Philadelphia Eagles thinking, our offense was pretty lights out last year until we lost to Sean Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And when we lost him, it just went off the rails. We really need that speed element, and that's what Ruggs is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's Ruggs is Tyreek Hill. And
I have Santana Moss as my comp. Yeah,
just that vertical guy who changes the dynamic of your offense.
Mm-hmm.
And teams that need that are going to covet a player like Ruggs.
Yeah,
but you know, point made. You know, there's a bunch of you're on I-75, and you know, do you want to get off at 12 mile, 14 mile? You know what I mean? It's just there's so many ways to think about how they can manage this.
Yeah.
Free agency is going to kind of dictate the terms here.
Yeah, it's going to tell you a lot more. But I still think they're going to take a receiver. They're going to sign a receiver in free agency. I don't think that would preclude them from still going after Judy. You know, they might sign a corner, which, depending on which one, could take them out of the Okuda mix. But I don't know, maybe not, you know, because because they have question marks with Slay, so.
I'll tell you, if Byron Jones comes here, I think that's a franchise-altering move.
Sure. I don't know.
Chris Jones comes here, I think that's a franchise-altering move.
That's an interesting one because they've tried to get him before. It's so hard to say, like, even picking at three, you can really make an argument. I think we've made arguments for seven other guys who they could take.
Yeah.
So, you know, could they trade all the way back to 12? maybe, and get a guy, but there's going to be a drop off. And they've said in the past, like, you want to stay in that top tier where you're getting an elite guy rather than just a very good guy, right?
That's true. And but so, I would say that if you moved to pick 12, 13 range, mm-hmm. you'd be accumulating.
Oh, you're getting another first out of it.
A first next year, which I think is more valuable.
Or maybe even a first this year.
Possibly.
Like if you trade with the Raiders down to 12, you're probably getting 19.
Okay.
Right? And if you're trading back twice, you know, maybe you're getting another day two, and it's, you know, now you got four day two picks or day three picks. No, I'm sorry, five day two picks, right? I mean, maybe they trade back more than once. I think that's optimistic. That's like super optimistic.
Well, I think that would be the smartest thing they could do, but yeah. I don't think that's going to
happen.
In
my mind, I think they're going to have a board that says, there's seven guys that we want, and we expect them to be gone in the seven picks, and we're not gonna trade back past seven. That's kind of my gut feeling right now. Now maybe that can change, and which seven guys those are, but we don't know. But there's seven guys that I think we talked about today that all make a lot of sense.
The fear for me, in some senses, is that they fall in love with one of those guys and stay. Right? And just decide that, all right, Derek Brown is our guy.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we were offered pick five and pick, you know, and two second rounders and a second rounder next year too, whatever mm-hmm. it is. But it's just not worth it for us to miss out on Brown. So we're going to stay at pick three and take our guy. And I think that's where I worry I'd worry about that.
And again, if Tua's medical don't check out, they could get stuck at three.
And
then they might have to. Ideally, you know, you're hoping Tua's health checks out, or you're hoping a team really loves Herbert, right?
Yeah.
And or they want to get ahead of the Giants for their tackle. I mean, I don't know why they would, but there's reasons. You never know why teams trade up for what they do, but I don't know. There's still a lot to be unpacked in this whole thing.
There is.
And we're early, but
you want to find I think that the reality is that you want to find players who impact the passing game.
Right.
Because the NFL is, I mean, it is, I think quarterback is your most important position.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would think, I think the analysis is that cornerback, in cornerback one, wide receiver, cornerback two, mm-hmm. wide receiver type players.
Yeah.
Those are the most important players on the field.
It's trending more and more that way now.
They are. So taking a player that doesn't really impact the passing game much
mm-hmm.
in a premium position like pick three would worry me.
And that's why we're also talking about the defensive tackles and the defensive ends, right?
Yeah.
And not worry. I don't think the Lions are in play for an offensive tackle. Like, let's get that out there right now. Not at three.
No, I think there's some players in rounds two and three.
Even though the Giants may be, I don't think the Lions would go that route. But just because of, like you said, what we've been talking about with all these other guys. So I think we're probably up against it. Yep, I think this might be the longest that we've gone. So
sorry.
No. I could keep talking for a long. I mean, I was hoping to get beyond more than just pick three, but I think diving in on what we did with these guys on pick three it was important. So I think we should probably cut it off there. I haven't checked any of the reviews or ratings to see if we've gone up or anything. We continue to have some nice support on Patreon, so we appreciate that. I put out an article that I sent out to the Patreon subscribers where I'm comparing the PFF score of every player on the Lions roster last year and where they ranked at their position versus their salary for 2020 and where that ranks. To see if there are any potential cut candidates. That's a cool thing that I Brandon Kerr asked me about, and so I put that out there for him. So if you're interested in the Patreon, I'm putting some articles out on there that I can't put out at Lions Wire. So until next time, we'll have Joe back next week. And Scott, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
It's always fantastic talking to you. Hopefully we can talk again before the draft, and we'll get some more fun knowledge out there for everybody. Appreciate it. Until next time, go Lions. Yeah.